Broadcasting from the studios of Business Radio X, it's time for Laser Life Insights. This show is brought to you by Sumas Medical Laser, changing lives with the power of light. Now, here's your host, Pete Cousins.
Good afternoon and welcome everybody to Laser Life Insights. I'm Pete Cousins, your host. We're sure happy to have you today on a Wednesday. I hope everyone's week is shaping up to be a good one. I'm really excited about our guest today, and I'll explain a lot as we introduce him as to his background and I think his clinical expertise with regards to both what we do with laser light and also some other complementary therapies or services. So I think you're in store for a great show. With that, we will jump into it and I'll introduce Dr. Mark Funderlich. Dr. Mark, thanks for joining us. Happy to have you.
Thanks for having me. Always love talking on podcasts.
Absolutely. Dr. Funderlich is a chiropractor. He works across multiple aspects of healthcare, actually. He's co-founder of the Regenerative Cell Therapy Management Corporation based in Atlanta, Georgia, which is a regenerative medicine lab focused on the production of umbilical-derived stem cells. You may have heard of exosomes and, of course, peptide-based products. So beyond that, he has also had his part to play with an electroregenerative therapy, which manufactures clinical PEMF or pulsed electromagnetic field devices. And he's there as the president of operations. To continue beyond manufacturing, Dr. Funderlich is a primary investigator with an IRB approved research division, which we'll get into a little bit in the podcast. He's in the process of expanding his clinical footprint with upwards of 7 different corporate locations across 5 different states. So certainly has his hands in a lot of different affairs. And finally, Dr. Funderlich is currently enrolled in the Regenerative and Stem Cell Technology Program at Johns Hopkins. So with a focus on developing new biologic drugs, interfacing with the FDA, and certainly helping to bring these different products to market, that's probably one of the most exciting endeavors that Dr. Mark has undertaken. So definitely a lot to unpack there. With that, why don't we jump in? And I like to always start by just finding out a little bit about your story. Obviously, people know that you have so many different things going on, but lead us, maybe give us the Cliff Notes version of how your career path took you to where you are today.
So I actually opened up my first business whenever we were still in chiropractic school. And the original kind of genesis for that business was opening an integrated facility. Mm-hmm. And so in that facility, we had a medical doctor who focused on regenerative medicine, stem cells, things like that, a nurse practitioner who did functional medicine, an applied kinesiology chiropractor who did more adjustments and I would say frequency type medicine. We had the food store, the supplement store, a weight loss psychologist, and a yoga studio with a gym in the basement. So we rented out a fair bit of square footage to accommodate all of that and really just started integrating kind of everything together for patients right from the beginning. And what really was interesting with that experience was we entered into a lottery system and we actually got approved for our medical doctor to be one of the first medical marijuana clinics opened in Pennsylvania. So he was able to win the lottery for that system. And when you look at entering into healthcare coming out of school, we have all these ideas, all these thoughts, you know, how we're going to help patients and put all these care plans together and do all these great things. And patients are going to be super compliant and want to get better. And looking at that with patients coming in, you would think, oh, they have chronic pain, they have anxiety, they have all these things, and they want to use the medical marijuana card to help that. And we can foray that into doing things like functional medicine. And people just were not super interested in that at all. They just wanted to come in and kind of rubber stamp and then leave and get their card. And so that really altered my path into how I was looking at medicine. And it really jaded me in the beginning from a clinical perspective. You have this thing for patients and you want them to use it to leverage and do so much more. And then they just didn't want to. And so long story short, we ended up selling that business, moving on from that business. My wife and I moved to New Jersey together. I took a job in neurosurgery. So I worked in intraoperative electrodiagnostics and cortical brain mapping. So I worked at Hudson Regional. I worked at the largest OR center for neurosurgery in New Jersey. And I lived probably 9 minutes away from the busiest OR in New Jersey. And when you live 9 minutes away from the busiest OR, you are the first person called for everything that needs to be done. And that did not last very long because they totally just wipe out your personal life, putting you on call all the time. Mm-hmm. And that really was also perspective changing for me, because we on our side of medicine proverbially give a lot of hate to the regular medical side. Right. When you live it and you actually work in neurosurgery and you see the things that we're doing, those physicians and those teams and those doctors are in rooms without windows, in wings of hospitals without windows, in completely stale buildings. We perform surgeries that were 36 hours long. So When you're at the hospital at 4:30 in the morning for a 5:30 start time, and you're not leaving until the next day, and you do that again and again and again, it just really wears on you. And my personality was changing even after 3 months of working that job. Mm-hmm. And for personal reasons, we ended up moving on from that job because I didn't want to work for 30 plus straight days.
Right.
I ended up opening up my own private practice in New Jersey. We started off in a very small room. I remember I literally had a table, a laser, and a closet. And that's I had a very makeshift desk. And eventually I got some neurologic rehab equipment in that little space, but we ended up growing that. My wife also worked at that facility, to taking up the entire wing of that side of the building. And we saw a couple thousand kids with special needs and neurologic conditions. And really the reason that I ended up getting into laser-based therapy was that I had a child who couldn't speak. She was a bit older, so it wasn't like she was 2 years old or anything like that. She was older. And we did 2 laser treatments for her. And after the second laser treatment, she got off of the treatment table and said, and looked over to her mom and said, "I love you," to her mom. That really pushed me and propelled me into the medical device side of things and just growing and building from there. Because once you see an experience like that, then you can't unsee it or just let it go. Right. And so then we started doing a lot of laser therapy on children, especially children with special needs and things like that, until that business grew. And then we decided to move to the Carolinas after dealing with all the pandemic stuff in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. So that's the beginning to moving to North Carolina. And then just through that, I took a position as the chief medical officer for a large hyperbaric company. And we did a bunch of weird stuff, like fighter jet ventilation systems because of the way the oxygen has to flow, nuclear submarine stuff, underground tunnels where you need certain hyperbaric systems for miners that get injured. And so I think just always being in that side realm while I was in practice, it gave me a very unique perspective where it was the medical device side, weird clinical stuff side, seeing a lot of unusual cases in my office combined with starting to use modalities like laser, hyperbaric oxygen, PEMF in successful integrated care plans along with functional medicine. And so then I started teaching for a lot of the state associations over the past couple of years. I think I taught my first state association class less than a year after I graduated from chiropractic school. So that's, I just love talking and public speaking and sharing experiences, because for me, 80 to 90% of the patient result is just having the doctor actually do the therapy, right? The hardest part is just getting the doctor to do the therapy. You either have doctors who are hesitant to get started, or you have doctors who get so lost in the weeds, which we do as speakers often by trying to build up the material, right? And, oh, I did this super special maneuver thing for this super secret patient. And it's just, all of that is great for stage and theater, but the reality is, how many more kids and patients would be helped if we just did something? And you're really in a no-lose situation with the laser therapy, because you're not going to hurt a patient doing a couple-minute treatment for them. A big part of my lecturing is just, it doesn't matter what it is, the hyperbaric oxygen, the laser, whatever, just do the therapy. Just put it on patients.
First of all, that's a very impressive resume. And certainly I can't imagine that there's so much more in your brain that you could go on and share with us about. But it's very impressive to say the least. And certainly you're a subject matter expert. Again, thankful that you're sharing with us. I think about your comment around just getting providers to do the therapy. And it's funny, I was joking at a trade show, a sports medicine trade show two weeks ago. And we had some providers come up and say, we don't believe. And they were transparent with me. They said, we don't believe in laser therapy. And I said, that's interesting because it's not a religion. It's actually science. And so they laughed. But it truly is something that whether you use the term alternative medicine, holistic medicine, naturopathic, it's a shame because I think, unfortunately, the general public community and a large portion of the medical community look down upon that. And it's such an underutilized therapy, which is really why I started this podcast to begin with. We want to spread the truth and we want to let people know about the possibilities. If you're in a room with a healthcare provider who is not up to speed on the science and not really in that frame of mind to just try the therapy, do you have any recollection of conversations with providers where you were maybe able to bring them around or at least get their mind opened up?
I feel like in a trade show perspective, right, the nice thing is you have the device there and you can showcase what it can do. From a getting started perspective, I feel like almost all doctors get started because of a personal experience with themselves. Whether they're at a trade show and then they use it on their injury that doesn't get better and all of a sudden they do get better. That's one. The medical device space is tough because it's not like we can just give them stuff to try on people. Right. So I think something that I'll do when I talk to doctors is I'll ask them about how they're currently running their practice. And then I probably have 20 plus hours worth of CE education for laser and some recorded videos and things like that. And it's really about finding the thing that matters most to them and then just exposing them to that literature and then following up. I talked to a provider the other week. Their child is a special needs child. Not so much that they're completely debilitated, but they're not speaking and they're behind. They're not sitting, all these types of things. And they had no idea you could even do laser for children and they have a pediatric practice. So then we dived into everything that there is with that. And I sent her probably 8 hours worth of continuing education material. And I leave it up to them. And I say, this is something that you really want to explore. I'm willing to go as far as you're willing to go. I'm willing to help you as much as you want help. Because then if you give them that material and they really do want to know, then they'll go through it. They'll ask questions. They'll get excited. And once they know what the possibilities are, then they're more likely to try the therapy or do the therapy or find a way to use the therapy, right? Whether it's from me, because sometimes they feel like I have a vested interest because I'm talking and I have a sponsor at the talk, you know, get them connected with other doctors and things like that. So I think it's really finding their passion, giving them the opportunity to dive into the education material and then come back. Just because there's so many people who go out there, say they're interested, but then they're not really interested. Yeah. They're not interested in changing their ways. They're not interested in changing their patient care, optimizing the settings for their patients. So that's one. I always just give as much as I can to them and then let them go as far as they want. And they really almost sell themselves in the fact that they have all 500 slides worth of material to go through. The ones who really want to learn now have that tangible piece.
No question. And the science and the literature, especially the most reputable type of clinical studies or white papers, we call it, would be out there in high numbers if people go to PubMed. And speaking of that, as I mentioned in the intro, you've got your hands in some IRB research. And since we may have patient consumers listening as well as healthcare providers, can you first give us a little background on what an IRB clinical trial means, and then let's dive into what you've been doing specifically at Johns Hopkins.
Sure. So if we start with research in general, there's a big gap when it comes to what we do in the laser space, in the HBOT space, I'm just going to say in the natural practitioner world. And this is a big reason why we get quote unquote looked down on all the time is because you go to the most up-nose neurosurgeon and you're looking at what research, what indications are there, how do you know the patient needs this therapy? You have the same knee pain. If I go to one chiropractor, they might want to do HBOT. If I go to another chiropractor, they'll want to do laser. If I go to another chiropractor, they'll want to run blood work and see if you have rheumatoid arthritis, right? And the patient has knee pain. They go all those places, get all these different answers. And technically, nobody is wrong. All of those things have proof that they are helpful. And then just beyond that, you could say the same thing for all of the vitamin IV therapies. You could say the same thing for all the injection therapy, right? And so we don't have this discernible, objective way for patients other than to try it to understand how do we know if this is an appropriate therapy or not. So a couple of years ago, one of my good friends asked me if I would help him in a startup venture in the stem cell space. He said, I have the money, the ability to get it started. I need somebody who has the scientific understanding and can really push more in that direction so the company has more legitimacy. And when we started that, we quickly realized it's almost like the same world of laser, just on a much more intensified scale, because we're dealing with injections that may be thousands of dollars for an injection, or thousands of dollars or tens of thousands of dollars for treatment plans. And to me, it just doesn't sit right to say, we're going to try this injection, right? We're going to try this thing for $10,000 for you. And then you look at resources and you have FDA approved this or not FDA approved that. And so what I wanted to do then was say, how can we objectively look at all of these different modalities, therapeutics, injectables, IVs, and figure out a way that we can start to move in a direction that gives consumers the ability to say, and doctors the ability to say, we're going to do a simple test and we can get some objective numbers. For example, with laser, we always talk about the mitochondrial mechanisms. So we teamed up with the University of California, Davis, and a private mitochondrial screening company. And we said, let's take samples from inside of a patient's knee and from their systemic system, from like a finger prick, actually measure their mitochondria, and then have them do something like laser therapy, have them do 3 times a week for 6 weeks, and see what are we actually changing within the mitochondria. And if we can identify trends within that, then we can produce a test that says laser therapy can affect this specific portion, as opposed to just being very general. Mm-hmm. And we can say when it's this far reduced, we know the patient's going to get a clinical outcome 90%+ of the time, because we're going to put the data together. Right. With that, it was, hey, if I have the ability from the clinics that I run to do a very high number of patients, let's just start measuring out everything. The stem cell injections, the laser therapy, the bed for the systemic treatment. Let's just start seeing how all of this is changing an objective marker that is actually affordable for patients to do. Because then doctors can say, hey, if you're going to pay $1,000 to do insert care, at least now, like a blood test, we can say, here, look, we know that laser affects the mitochondria. Here's your mitochondria score. It's deficient. I think this is something that your body needs to improve. We ran, I think, 3,200 blood works on children when I was in New Jersey. And so reading blood work in that kind of mindset of objective data, to me, feels a lot better than lasering a patient's knee and then saying, do you feel better? Do you not feel better? And then that will also lend credence to everybody in the industry, because now a doctor could say, I don't believe in laser therapy. And we can say, here's not just a VAS pain scale trial. This is actually the molecular mechanism, the actual subportion of the mitochondria that we're actually changing. We're changing and looking at reactive oxygen species within the mitochondria. We're looking at the interconnectivity of mitochondria. So we're actually taking pictures, fluorescing the mitochondria, and then seeing how many connections they make to their neighboring mitochondria so they can transmit information and bring function up. And we're looking, and you basically use different drugs and medications to ramp up so you can see the maximum output of those mitochondria. You can see what happens when they get dampened. So what we know is that even in things like Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's disease, the subtextual mitochondrial failure that comes with these disorders, we can measure clear and distinct differences. So that means we may be able to say, hey, laser therapy is actually better for Parkinson's patients. Doesn't mean it's not useful for Alzheimer's patients, but just that gets us that first step to say, hey, let's start to objectify this. And then that lends much better to long-term acceptance from the quote-unquote standard medical system, if that's, you know, a road that a practitioner is interested in.
Very exciting. I think all those points are valid. Some credibility, some credence that would be lent to this if you had even greater objective measure. Where are you at with all of these studies? Are you mid-course? Are you almost finished? Have you just begun? Well, kind of where are you at?
So we're in the early stages for most of the things, as we're looking at adding in the bed into that situation. So we haven't collected any data on that. The research study itself has been going on for a while, as far as the actual mitochondria portion and testing. They've looked at a bunch of things, mostly biochemical things. And then the piece that I added on and brought into was the physical objective changes. Now, the nice thing is, since we're not looking for an FDA clearance, we can actually look at the data as it's coming in and make adjustments, because we're looking to see what kind of change we're making. We're not having to blind it and say, prove to the FDA that this therapy, we could do that once we know what the change is or once we get some clinical data. But until then, we're really able to see. So over the next, I would say, 4 to 6 months, we'll have usable information that we could start providing to doctors to get them on the right track. And then we'll probably publish, and by the time everything's done, and it'll be out on PubMed in the world in probably 2 years.
Fantastic. So this biomarker assessment, is it done just with a finger prick, a blood sample? Is it done with saliva, or how do they go about actually collecting it from a patient?
So there's two ways that we are doing it. One, we're doing it with a finger prick to look at the systemic markers. Mm-hmm. And then two, we're looking at an intraarticular aspiration. So we're taking a little piece from inside of the knee, because when we're doing something like laser therapy to the knee, we want to take the actual mitochondria from that tissue. And now we can say objectively, this is how the change is. The way that systemic testing works versus local testing works is a little different right now. In the next year, we'll be able to actually identify subsets of mitochondria from different tissue in the systemic test. We're just not that far down the road. Now, the other thing that we added into this was the exosome testing. So exosomes are probably something that the listeners are less familiar with in general. Stem cells have gotten most of the buzz, let's say, for the past 30 years. But exosomes are actually extracellular vesicles. So little particles that live inside of cells. And then you could think of them as being popped out of a cell to go and communicate with another tissue in your body. So we know cytokines are the way that our immune system talks to each other. Extracellular vesicles, or exosomes, are the way that your liver cell actually communicates with the rest of your liver what's going on. And so science is really going to where we'll actually use the exosomes as diagnostic indicators of when you have something like liver cancer, right? We know the exosome profile that your liver is giving off will start to change. So these are a little bit confusing, because you can actually take what's inside of those packets, right? And you could give them to another person if they're very healthy, right? And they're going to be entering in cells and changing the way the cells work for the better. I almost say it's like taking a scratched CD. And when you put those healthy exosomes in, it erases all the scratches. So your actual organ tissue can build better proteins back, or play that music again properly. So erasing the DNA damage and things like that. Now, what we don't know is exactly what those profiles look like for things that are not extreme disorders like cancer. So we're actually building out a library while we're doing this and seeing how does the exosome profile from a human being change from doing something like the VitaBed? How does the exosome profile from inside of a knee change from doing something like a laser therapy or a stem cell injection? So when we look at this, the mitochondria is one test, right? One organelle, an energy producing factor in the body. But the exosomes are really looking at, what is your knee saying about itself to the rest of your body? What signals is it giving off? What things is it saying, we need to change, this part is broken down? And so we're starting to decipher down what do these large blasts of very small particles mean? And that's really where medicine is going. So we're getting ahead of that. And there really, I don't think there is anybody else who's actually measuring these minute factors, right? The smallest exosomes that are produced are one nanometer wide. And the biggest one is like 500 nanometers wide. Mm-hmm. They carry RNA. They carry actual intracellular organelles to be delivered to other cells to heal them and to provide support. So this kind of is where molecular medicine is going. And we want to see what is laser doing? What are all these therapeutics doing? Because then we can be in front of and really send out the messaging for the therapy in its next iteration, which is just getting more and more cellular and micro.
Incredible. Pretty deep subject, to say the least. But I think certainly it's becoming a little bit more well-known, as you said. And so looking forward to hearing your progress with all of that work. To stay on this vein, we have talked about stem cell and injections and this regenerative injection type of category and combining it with laser. I think you and I talked about this maybe a month or so ago. Mm-hmm. So there's one school of thought, which I think is very well founded, which says if you would inject, let's say, a mesenchymal stem cell into a joint and then immediately apply laser therapy, what would be the expectation that you would give to provider or patient in that kind of combo therapy scenario?
Sure. I think like we can break this down, this combination therapy, into two phases. One, in the pre-treatment phase, and two, in the post-treatment phase. I think I'm always very pro doing the therapy as an integrated therapy, because when we inject a stem cell or exosomes into a joint, the first thing that it's going to do is try to dampen the inflammation, right? The inflammation itself creates an issue for the stem cells. That's the first thing they're going to want to get rid of. So why would a patient want to spend money on a stem cell injection, which should be being used for regenerative purposes, to do something like dampen inflammation, when we know that something like the laser is going to do just as good of a job? Why wouldn't we wipe that out? So now the stem cells can go and actually, instead of dampening inflammation, go to donating tissue, donating their mitochondria, healing and regenerating the tissue that's left over. So just from thought process one, every stem cell clinic should be doing laser, in my opinion, a couple times a week leading up to the injection to wipe out that inflammatory cascade as much as possible. So that way, when the injection happens, you actually get regenerative effects as opposed to pain dampening effects or anti-inflammatory effects. From a signaling mechanism, if you laser the tissue and do the injection at the same time, what we know is that the mitochondrial signaling gets ramped up. We know it only gets ramped up in the injured tissue. So what we say is that the laser increases the homing mechanism of a stem cell injection. So we know through some research studies that are published, whether you do it into a joint or you do it systemically in your body, if you laser, let's say, your right shoulder and you radiofluoresce the stem cells and then put them into an IV, they're going to go to your lungs for about 4 hours, and then they're going to go to whatever tissue is most affected. Now, you can almost focus that four-hour burst to wherever the laser is going, because ramping up the mitochondria and the cell signals hones in the stem cells from systemic circulation into that area. And since you just dumped whatever it is, a couple million extra cells into your circulation, they just go immediately there. That's one. Versus if you did something like a PEMF would improve the grafting. So what the pulsed electromagnetic signals do is program the stem cells and help them adhere to the damaged tissue. And you could think about it as donating 99% of their material as opposed to 80% of their material, versus the laser is going to say, come over here. We need more help over here. So it helps you do the direction. So it's almost like you're a child with a bucket of water. Where do I need to go? Which flower bed needs this? And then doing a better job of dumping the entire bucket into that sandbox.
Very interesting. So you said two things. I just wanted to make sure I'm clear. You talked about fluorescing the stem cells prior to injection. Are you referring to actually lasering the stem cells prior to injecting them wherever they're going? Or are you talking about some other type of light activation?
Oh, so that would be you put a little radioactive fluorescence in them so you can see where they're going.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I understand. Yep. I understand.
So that way, because otherwise we wouldn't know where they go, right?
Sure.
We have to be able to see.
Okay. So that makes sense. And then when you talk to someone who may have had a regenerative stem cell injection and had zero success or did not get the level of outcome they were expecting, is this a way to reconsider having that therapy done in a different manner? Or do you suspect if someone has an injection, gets no response, that's just a fact for them as a patient?
So I think there's, I guess, let's say three factors to go through. One is, what is the actual etiology of this patient's problem, right? So if the patient has a mixed connective tissue disorder problem, where the issue is really autoimmune in nature, then you really have to consider, what work are you doing before the injection, right? You go see a standard orthopedist, they're just going to do the injection because that's what they're supposed to do for this type of degeneration. Where if you have a mixed connective tissue issue, you have to calm the immune system down to stop it from repeatedly breaking your joints down. So if you're not doing like an autoimmune paleo protocol and supplements and keeping your vitamin D, I keep people's vitamin D at 100 to 120. Mm-hmm. When working with those types of patients, doing a stem cell injection just isn't going to yield a long-term positive result for those patients. So that's one, we always like to do lab work beforehand. Two, you have to look at the quality of what is being injected. So there's a couple different types of stem cells. There's bone marrow derived mesenchymal cells. There's ones from your fat, which can be useful in certain situations. There's ones from the umbilical cord. And there's a bunch of manufacturers that everybody, just like every other industry, is competing on price. Are they, what is that manufacturer's post-thaw viability rate? Right. We will stand by that the post-thaw viability rate of everything that we send out of the lab is above 90%. And we say that for production claims, but we've never had a batch in the past 2 years test below 95% post-thaw viability. So the industry average, if you're not using the newest, the latest equipment, is anywhere from 20 to 60%.
Oh, wow.
So it's really bad. And so the source that you're getting those products from is very important. And unfortunately, stem cell industry is a pretty mucky industry. If a doctor can get cheap stem cells, they will. And so who knows? We're not allowed to sell count in the United States. So I can't sell you as a doctor a vial of stem cells that has 4 million cc's in it, 12 million cc's in it, right? I have to leave it as the raw material. So there's really no way for me to, in theory, verify. We do enough data collection and testing in the lab that we know. And there's no way for you as the doctor to control the dose that patient is getting. So source is very important. Type of stem cell is very important. If the patient is too degenerated, they don't have any cartilage left to save in a knee, then maybe the adipose stem cells are better because it provides a graft. So it provides tissue that can graft and create some padding versus doing the umbilical type stem cells. If there's no cartilage to quote unquote regenerate or heal, what's it going to do? It's just going to be a complete waste of time.
Sure.
So getting the right stem cells for the right case, making sure they're high quality, productive stem cells, number two, and then really doing your due diligence and making sure the patient is the right candidate is number three. The other thing that is interesting from a FDA regulation perspective, stem cell labs are regulated as blood banks, not as actual labs. Like you, if you do your 23andMe, that's a lab, a molecular lab that does the processing. We are a blood bank because we're dealing with human tissue and things like that. So the FDA will let up to 5% contamination in a batch of stem cells. So we don't let anything out less than 0.05, right? So we make sure there's literally as little as possible in there, but up to 5% of what in a vial could just straight up be another person's red blood cells and non-useful tissue. Mm. when you look at the way we produce these things, we produce it in a way that doesn't require any additives. And also the stem cells that we produce have never been through any gene therapies. So no mRNA vaccines or anything like that from the source tissue, from the source person. Now, if you don't use certain techniques to actually freeze and stabilize those stem cells, you have to add preservatives. And those preservatives are sulfur-based. People can get inflammatory reactions from the sulfur. If you don't know you have a sulfur allergy and then do a stem cell injection, your knee might swell up. And now you've just wasted that injection because you're having an allergic reaction. So tissue contamination, even from what's FDA legal, is a possibility. Additives and preservatives, source tissue quality, and being the right patient, right? And so we can talk about optimizing with laser therapy and all these other things and diet and lifestyle and peptides, but the industry as a whole doesn't even have that initial standard because there aren't heavy FDA regulations on things beyond using stem cells for cancer, bone cancer transplants, or things like that. So I hope I didn't go around in too many circles, but does that answer that question?
It's a fantastic answer. So talk to the audience a bit about Regenerative Cell Therapy Management is the corporation that you're one of the co-founders of.
Yes.
What do you do if there's a provider listening who's maybe interested in getting into regenerative medicine injections and or laser therapy? What is it that you and your team at Regenerative Cell Therapy Management do with a new client? And then surely let us know how anybody could get in touch with you to maybe have that discussion started.
Sure. So we have a couple different paths for a patient or for a physician. Whether they're a chiropractor or whether they're a nurse practitioner or a medical doctor, domestically or internationally, we sell to every continent in the world except for Australia, which is just because we don't have anybody who buys from us there, not because of rules or anything. When we are talking with a physician, our goal is to build a long-term relationship with them. So we will, if you want to just buy product, like we have people who don't care about our opinions, they can just buy product from us. We have two different stem cell products. We have two different exosome products. We're releasing three different wound care and skin care products. And then we have a series of peptides that we provide that are all oral in nature because the FDA regulations around that are still completely viable. It's only in the injectable form have peptides had an issue with at the compounding pharmacy level. So all the peptides we work with are orally done. So if you just want to buy stuff, that's great. Okay. If a physician needs more help though, like they want to do integrative protocols, like I work through that, we do an inventory of their office. What modalities do they have? And how can we create integrative programs based on their specialty and what things they have special access to make unique and creative programs for their patients, right? Because my clinic may have the bed, right, in Idaho. And we may have lasers and HBOTs and all this stuff, but a pain management doctor may have ability to do completely other things in their practice, right? And so more than just with laser and chiropractic and things like that, we want to inventory everything you have so we can build optimal care plans for patients. And then obviously the third avenue is if they need startup capital, if they need our help, we can provide all the legal framework and everything like that to help get them started and then to help get those first couple patients in the door. So we have the corporate offices that we open that work directly with us. We can help you just optimize your protocols or you can just buy products from us. Obviously, inside of those last two, we really care about what lasers you're using, when you're using them, you know, what your target demographic is, really optimizing that because maybe a laser is their next best option when you include the rest of their pain management clinic, right? It could be like, hey, you could use this for your stem cell program and for your sports athletes. So it's really inventorying and helping the clinic as a whole.
Yeah, I really like that. We should put together a webinar and have you provide some education. I'm sure that would be well attended. Okay, fantastic. Boy, we could keep talking probably for hours. Let's pivot just a little bit before we run out of time and talk about the work that you've done. You mentioned this already a little bit in the beginning, working with children and working with perhaps children who have special needs, and or perhaps any type of patient who has a neurodegenerative disorder. Let's just focus in on that for a little bit and talk to us about what you've seen with regards to laser and how it has helped people with maybe those kind of struggles.
Sure. So with a lot of those patients, I have a specific series of events that we do. So one, most of my patients are not coming in and seeing me and getting a 1 week treatment, a 2 week treatment. In the chiropractic space, especially the chiropractic neurology diplomate space, we really do these intensive 1 week programs, 2 week programs, where kids will be treated kind of multiple times a day and then they'll be gone. For me, that's not how I do things. We do at least 6 weeks of diet, lifestyle, nutrition, supplemental changes, because we want to, just like we do with the stem cells, we want the natural person and just doing things right for the long term, clearing the inflammation with diet, clearing the inflammation with supplements, helping get everything set. So that way, after those 6 weeks to 3 months, depending on what the case actually has from a diagnostic perspective, then we're going to start working with the physical patient, having them do, again, three categories of things. One is actually physical, straight up exercise. We have Airdyne bikes in the office where kids will do high intensity interval training. We have little ones for kids so they can get on them and go. We do deadlifts. We do grip strength training. We do tons of things that we know. If you look in the literature, the number one thing for anything, ADHD, Parkinson's, all this stuff, is actual strenuous physical exercise and strengthening the body. Mm-hmm. So all of that can actually take hold if the metabolic system is in order. And then we would use something like laser therapy while they're doing those various activities. And in kids, it's 20 seconds on, off, 20 seconds on, off. You're getting in what you can get in while they're doing those therapies to cement them. They're not laying on a table for 10 minutes or 20 minutes and getting lasered. So the therapists are running around and corralling the kids and going from room to room and bouncing all over the place. We combine that with neurospecific exercises. And honestly, this is where I think if physicians were to do blood work, fix all of the basic stuff, vitamin D deficiencies, iron deficiencies, reduce CRPs, just all of this basic stuff that you don't have to be a diplomate to understand, and then put those kids through fun, intense physical exercise, just doing some basic screening, you're going to improve that child's life so much that it would be unbelievable. And then if you want to add on top of that, the neurospecific exercises like eye movement therapies, then that's like an icing on the cake. But I'll just give you an example of a patient that I had. So I had a patient, and he was an older man. He had a heart attack and he was in a coma. So he came into our office to work through some of these obvious issues that he was having. We could have just gone right in and started doing laser therapy and HBOT and all this stuff, right? But instead we ran blood work, because I have a phlebotomist in my office. So we ran blood work on the patient who was in a coma, and his hemoglobin A1C was literally like 55. Mm-hmm. It was astronomically high. And there's no amount of exercise or laser that's going to overcome a patient. Their A1C should be less than 6, right? Should really be in the low fives. But his is way past that. And that's because when you have these patients with severe neurologic conditions, they give them basically just, they're called tetra packs or sugar packs. And so we talked to the family and they were feeding him tons of these packs a day. Mm. Just because the insurance covered it. Insurance just shifts a box of Tetra Paks to you, 32, 64, 128 at a time, every couple weeks. And so they just were trying to keep up with the shipments as opposed to what he needed, because the doctor just overprescribes, because you don't want to be left without food. So we actually had the patient come off of the Tetra Pak and insert whatever legal and blah, blah, blah. The patient came off the Tetra Pak and we had them literally put Indian food down the patient's G-tube, and the guy woke up from the coma in 2 weeks.
Unbelievable.
Beyond that, and he could do rudimentary communication, all that kind of stuff. Beyond that, then we started doing direct current brain stimulation. We started doing laser therapy. I can send you a picture of him afterwards, they signed a media release, but just so you could see us working with him. But it's like, you don't do the basic stuff. And then when you do the basic stuff and add laser therapy or other therapies in on top of it, all of a sudden patients who might have not got a result, or like we talked about with the stem cells, might have think that, oh, laser doesn't work for me, or stem cells don't work for me. So you just got to do the basics and be a healthy person first. And then all of these regenerative therapies, which laser is really a regenerative therapy, you're going in changing DNA sequencing to reduce out inflammatory proteins, right? You're working on a epigenetic level.
Right.
So then all those therapies can make long-lasting, permanent changes for patients versus just being like an Advil or an aspirin, reducing inflammation, then being like, oh, came back 2 weeks later.
Really incredible. I know if anybody has listened to one of our early episodes, we had Dr. Scott Haggerty, and Dr. Haggerty is also very involved with treating neurodegenerative disorders, works with a lot of children, ADHD, autism, seasonally affective disorder, all these different types of conditions affecting the brain. And so I need to connect the two of you. I'm sure you'll have a lot to talk about in that arena. Okay, so just to take a quick pause and remind everybody, if you have interest in getting into photobiomodulation and you want to take a look at a number of different devices that may be good additive product for your clinic, make sure to check us out at sumislaser.com. That's where you'll find our handheld class 4 laser devices. And then our newest device, the Vita light therapy bed. You can find us there at vita.sumislaser.com. That's vita.sumislaser.com. Dr. Mark, if people want to get in touch with you, how would you like to go about giving any of your contact information?
Sure. I always never know my contact information off the top of my head. I'm sure we'll put the website for cell therapy management in the notes, but okay. Our website is literally just www.celltherapymanagement.com. Okay. That'll have a phone number and an email that people could reach out to. Otherwise, if people want to shoot us a text or a call, then we can put our direct line in the show notes as well.
Okay, perfect. That sounds good. So I certainly need to have you back on the show again. There's so much to continue talking about, and I'm so excited about all the clinical work that you're doing to help advance this category of photobiomodulation, and certainly the synergy between that and regenerative injection. So regenerative medicine in general is certainly one on the forefront of the new age of medical care. So thank you for all that you're doing. Thanks for being a good friend and a partner to us. I'll sign off now and wish everybody a fantastic week. John, as always, thank you for producing the show. It's fantastic. And we will talk to all of you again real soon. Thanks, Dr. Mark. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on Laser Life Insights. This show is brought to you by Sumis Medical Laser, revolutionizing laser therapy to heal with the power of light. For more information, go to sumislaser.com.